Welcome to Crime Wire, an elite team of veteran investigation experts, along with noted crime consultants and attorneys, often featured on the popular news programs for families of violent crimes, to find answers and seek justice. The Crime Wire team, Denny Griffin, retired investigator and author, Susan Murphy Milano, violence expert and author, are there, on top of the crime, at the top of their game. Crime Wire is a place for information, news, safety, and most importantly, justice. Our interactive website is www.crimewiresite.com. You can call in any time during the show with the numbers 1-646-478-0982. And remember, you can participate in tonight's show simply by going live on our interactive chat room right here on Blog Talk Radio. If you're a friend or you're a family member and you'd like to send the Crime Wire team information on an unsolved or suspicious death case, or you want to be considered for a segment on a case for a future show, please email us at thecrimewire@gmail.com. Denny is off tonight, and with us is our favorite guru, statement analysis expert across the country, who happens to be an investigator as well, Peter Hyatt. Peter, welcome, sir.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to talk tonight about the Sheena Morris case. January 2009, Sheena Morris was murdered in her hotel room. Yet authorities quickly labeled it a suicide. She was hanging by her neck in the shower by one of her Yorkie's dog leashes. The crime scene was most fascinating as the circumstances surrounding her sudden suicide. Sheena also placed a call to 911 the night before to report a domestic violence by her dangerous boyfriend. She even took pictures of her injuries, a cut on her neck and one on her ring finger. The people in the next room of the hotel where she was staying in Animal Island called 911 the night before her murder to report the domestic disturbance and the sound of violence next door. She had also obtained a damaging evidence on his alleged illegal activities shortly before she died. The keys to her apartment were taken, and she specifically we have an investigation. And what is really horrific about this is when they were there, she's treated as though she's a prostitute. This is Anna Marie Island, and so officers see this beautiful, beautiful blonde girl, 22 years old, and treat her other than a crime victim. They don't give her any information. She's in a domestic violence situation. And Peter, how many times do we see these cases, and we hear about them only with the fact after the fact?
This one's really concerning, and I know you've been covering it, and I'm kind of in a catch-up position of it. But, Susan, I have no explanation as to why it was handled initially the way it was. I don't understand the first response, and I don't understand the responses that followed.
You know, we have been covering this case for a long time, and the family has also petitioned the governor because the case was changed, for the listeners that are listening, from a suicide to an undetermined. Welcome, Kelly Osborne, to the show. You know, this is your daughter. The night that you get the call, what happened when you're told that your daughter did they come to your home or did they call you?
Well, it was actually very confusing. It started out earlier in the day when the boyfriend calls me to let me know that the text messages that I got from his phone saying that to stay out of his and Sheena's life and leave them alone, he was calling me that day to say that he did not send those messages. But then he goes on earlier that afternoon to tell me that they got into a fight and that he starts claiming that she's suddenly suicidal. So now I'm looking for Sheena. I've got friends. I'm calling her friends, trying to get her friends to reach out for her to answer. So I'm thinking that what she was doing was, you know, hopped in a cab and was taking a cab back to her apartment. But what happens is, as I'm trying to call her cell phone, looking for her, shortly, like a minute later, my phone rings, and I'm very excited because my cell phone is showing that she's calling me back. But, in fact, the police accidentally called my phone. So when I got Sheena's phone call, I'm yelling for Sheena because there's getting no response. So I tell my husband, I said, oh, my God, I think Sheena's been kidnapped. I said, you know, she just called here, and she's not answering, and I hear a man's voice in the background. Well, as it turns out, it's the police in the background. My husband had taken over the phone and was screaming and yelling into the phone for someone to answer. He handed me his cell phone and told me to call 911 when he realized he heard police radios in the background. So it was very difficult to get any answers after that. 911 was telling me that, you know, there are officers at that address, but they don't know that my daughter's involved. So all this is going on for several hours, and then finally, it must be the police department had Hillsborough County Sheriff, where we live, come and make the appearance to let us know if Sheena's passing.
Now, Peter, what is interesting about this is that when she makes the call to 911, and the police are there, there is a report generated 2 days after her death. Is that odd procedure? Does that make any sense to you? Do they have to cover their derriere because they made the report and then all the options are going to go back and we have to, you know, cover behind?
Well, first of all, to Kelly, I'm very sorry for your loss, and if there's any way I can be of assistance to you, I plan to be. I know that Susan is passionate about helping others that have been victims of domestic violence. But first, I'm terribly sorry for your loss.
Thank you, Peter.
There's so many questions that I have. My first question, I think it was my first question to you, Kelly, was if the officer's first language was English, because it's that poorly written, his report. So, and I'm going to get to some of the things that are in his report that are concerning, but just to answer your question first, Susan, it is unusual. It is not the expected, but it does sound like a CYA move, that someone's trying to cover their own rear end.
And I think, too, you know, in her camera, after she's gone, when they get their belongings later on in the suitcase, there's this picture that I've been putting up all over the place, which is the boyfriend in the bathtub. Now, why didn't police, and there's also two cups there, one that he's drinking out of and the other one where he's dousing his cigar ashes and sitting there smiling. That's evidence, isn't it?
It is. I don't understand how, I actually understand the cover-up of what mistakes that were made. I don't understand the thinking going in at first. How is it that someone can be a victim of domestic violence and within 24 hours be dead and not have an investigation? A. B, I'd like to know what caused, and perhaps Kelly can answer this, what caused the change in status from suicide to undetermined?
We had Sheena exhumed and two different forensic pathologists go through everything. Second autopsy was done.
We should mention it's Dr. Bodden, Michael Bodden, and it's also Dr. Michael Berkland, and this family has had to spend an incredible amount of money just to get the truth.
Well, I should back up a little bit first, because we do want to give the initial medical examiner some credit, because they were trying to be careful before they did this, because they found many things that were suspicious. You know, they even alerted to me as I was working on this, they even alerted to me that there were things that they found odd, such as, you know, most suicides, you know, have a high amount of alcohol or drugs, and Sheena didn't have that. So there was a lot of things that were concerning to them. However, there was a lot of information the police did not bring to the medical examiner. So they had, you know, very little to go on. But we ended up taking all that information. There was another detective who accompanied me. The forensic pathologist accompanied us to the medical examiner's office. And that's where the discussion was to get this changed. Now, their first concern was because we talked about it actually being changed to a homicide. But the medical examiners and the team there, they were a little concerned about how a judge was going to react to this, saying, how do you jump from suicide right to homicide? I said, well, then, you know, let's go down the middle. Let's get it changed to undetermined and let the police finish, you know, let the police take over doing their work. At least this reopens the investigation. However, we were wrong because the police refused to reopen it. Basically, after 8 hours of meetings, the detective on the case basically said, you know, I said, how do you explain all these professionals who've given their professional opinion that this was not a suicide? And he said, that's just their opinion.
Why don't you give the detective's name, who probably had a new floor put in after this somewhere in his own home? Because
Detective
Leonard
really, Diaz?
Yes, because he has been, Peter, I have never seen or heard a detective blatantly slap a victim's family to the curb like this detective has. And
listen, I've never heard you speak that way about anyone in law enforcement before this case. I've never heard you speak that harshly.
I usually watch what I say, but in this case, I mean, this man has, you know, come out and said things about this is an overzealous mother, refusing after the death certificate is changed from, and Sheena gets it changed. You know, a year later, she gets a change from suicide to undetermined. That's new evidence. It's a new way to go in on the case. And he basically tells her to go to hell. And
I noticed that one of the reactions was that if you want to talk to us, have your lawyer call us, which is the same thing as saying it's going to cost you more money. It's just a roadblock.
And she's already spent an incredible amount of money on this. He's lost the fingernail clippings from that night. He's not... And I'm not attacking someone. I'm pointing out and making an observation about a Bradenton Beach police cop. That's why he's on that beach. And he shouldn't be investigating a case like this because this woman was murdered and a very dangerous individual is running around and thinking that it's funny.
Yeah.
His mother trying to get justice.
I know, Susan, that you're always very respectful and very pro-law enforcement. And so when I hear your anger, it really catches my attention, just as the story has, that this was just so botched.
For a year. And I don't appreciate, you know, things that have happened as well. I mean, there's been things that, you know, to keep this mother's safety, because people are angry out there. And there's been other cases in the last couple of weeks since we've been doing other shows, the Raw show and my own show, and putting the stuff on the blogs. People have come forward with a whole bunch of unsolved suicides or homicides or murders, and we're going to be putting some of these cases on in the next couple of weeks to follow, because they're coming and saying kind of the same thing. So it's not just Sheena Morris's case, it's also these other family victims. But to basically, you know, think that she's going to go away, the FDLE out there, the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, doesn't seem to want to enforce anything. All anybody is asking is to open up the investigation, get Diaz out of there, appoint somebody special in there, because everything points to a staged crime scene. By all the documents, by all the crime scene photos that I've seen, it's real easy. And I'm not the expert in that, but when I saw all the documentation, all the information, and spoke to the experts, it was plain to see. She was murdered. And I do believe that there's also something, and maybe, Peter, you can address this. The person who was seeing her, you know, that night when they were together, he has a couple of aliases. His birth date is really that, you know, some years back, but on 1/1. That's the night she died. So I think there's also significance to how and why he does it. Do you agree or not agree?
Oh, sure. I mean, it's anything could be a trigger, but how far can we stretch this to say, here is domestic violence, here is a report of domestic violence, here is a young woman who is so convinced that she's not going to be believed that she takes pictures of her injuries, and 24 hours later she commits suicide?
Apartment keys are gone. Her apartment keys, where there's a box with information that could possibly be going to the feds, it's gone. So he takes her keys, goes to, and people see this, people see him walking out with the boxes, and they're gone, and it's in a locked closet. So that's what he does. And there's alleged safe money in different places in her name. You know, he's angry. She wants to kind of break up the relationship. And she does things where she thinks she's going to be safe, and she doesn't, and she's killed. Kelly, why does he put – there's a significance with the dog leash around her neck, isn't there?
You know, I really do think so. You know, he got her both of the dogs. And it was the male dog's leash. Sheena, with him, the minute she got him, she spent a great deal of money because he was very sickly when he was young. And, you know, I know the first bill that she had with him was $1,700, and those dogs are everything to her. But what's interesting is he used the dogs a week prior to punish her. They had gotten into a fight on Christmas night. When he leaves the apartment, he takes Sheena's two dogs from her that night. He returns them at probably about 6 or 7 in the morning, because obviously he doesn't really want the dogs. He doesn't care about the dogs. You know, he wasn't even willing to adopt them after Sheena. But he used the dogs as punishment that night because of their argument.
And in the stall, the bathroom, there's sand on the floor that they don't pick up on, you know, and that's important. Also, they don't interview.
No, wait. There's sand on the bottom of her feet, but
I'm
there's
sorry.
No sand on the shower floor. So
okay,
how do you step into the shower and have sand all over the bottom of your feet, but none on the shower floor?
It's not possible. And then also, Peter, no one interviews the hotel manager, who says what to them, Kelly?
His story wasn't quite straight in the morning when they spoke to the hotel owner, because he said when the hotel called the boyfriend to say you and Sheena need to leave, we don't tolerate domestic violence here. He responded by saying, I don't know what you're talking about, any domestic violence. I left last night because my daughter was sick.
And that wasn't true.
No, it wasn't.
And nobody interviewed her. And then nobody interviewed the person that made the 911 call next door. And that person is somebody that you've kept in contact all this time, and they're afraid of it for their lives, aren't they?
Yeah, well, they asked them a few questions, but they left everything out that she gave them. They didn't write it in the report. They didn't put her right phone number in. And they did not use her correct name, so that I couldn't get in touch with her. But by a miracle, I did.
Can I ask you some questions about the police statement itself that Kelly, you had sent me? This is the one where I asked whether or not English was his first language, because it's so poorly written. But there are things in it that he referenced about speaking with you that aren't true. Is that correct?
Yes. Very correct, yes.
Yeah, could you take me through that? Because here it says, while speaking with her, Osborne was very helpful with information about Sheena's past. Osborne stated that Sheena had seen death throughout her childhood, starting with Osborne giving CPR to her father, Sheena's grandfather, he wrote, which passed away. That's the way he wrote it. Osborne stated that she felt Sheena had mental issues due to a few of her friends committing suicide in the past. Osborne advised that Sheena had gone to a friend's funeral the week prior. Osborne stated that she and Joseph had just been talking about possibly Baker acting Sheena. So if you could start with that point of what when you spoke to him, how did that go?
Well, I'm really glad that you asked me about this, because this is probably the most infuriating thing that upsets me, because if someone were to just go and retrieve the police records and look at this, they're thinking, what is the mother talking about? Look what the cop says right here. So let me explain that. First of all, Diaz would ask me a question,
Kelly, hold on a minute. You're coming in kind of muffled and hard to understand, so maybe move to it. Okay. Go ahead, please.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
He would ask me a question, has Sheena experienced death? Well, yes, She lost her grandfather when she was young. He might have asked me about, you know, to suicide or any friends, and I would explain. So I guess he's using that in his report to show some sort of correlation when there isn't one. But then when he says that I said Sheena had mental issues and bipolar, it's absolutely ridiculous. What I explained to him was that suddenly that day, the boyfriend is the one calling me before I even know about Sheena's death, saying, I think Sheena's suicidal. And he's going on with this conversation that, you know, he think that he's got me worried about Sheena. I have him call Sheena's father. And he does the same thing with Sheena's father. But as a matter of fact, he starts crying on the phone while talking to Sheena's father and speaks of her in a past tense, saying, if she could have only gotten along with my kids. And apparently he's crying like a baby at this point. Well, I don't really know what's going on. I'm like going, well, you know, I'm explaining to the boyfriend, well, if you really think that she's suicidal, let me call a hospital. And this is that day. It's not a week prior, like the report says. That day I call a hospital and say, how do I know if someone's suicidal, because I'm not seeing anything here. How do you know when to Baker Act someone, you know, trying to get some information, because he's got me so worried.
Sure.
All of a
sudden.
Actually,
let's back it up a little bit before you go that far. The first thing we notice then is that in his report, when he says what you said, you know, Osborne stated, he doesn't tell us that this was in response to direct questions. He asked leading questions to make it very neat and close the suicide book very quickly. Has she ever talked about this? Have you ever talked about that? Has she ever experienced death? Of course. How do you make it to 22 years of age and not have lost someone in your life or have some death? Everyone has lost someone. So this is he doesn't report it, letting us know that, first of all, it's in response to questions and specific questions. So it makes it sound as if here he found someone who committed suicide, and her own mother just is telling her all the reasons why she committed suicide and how depressed she was. You're putting words in your mouth, but what I'm sensing from the writing is that this was done not just in haste, but with a lack of care, commitment, or thought. Just real thoughtlessness. Let's just move on and get it over with. Not a very intelligent report. There's also something in the report that bothers me a great deal, but I'll get to that. I wanted to let you finish, but that was the first thing I wanted to say, is that your words are in response to direct questioning, and really it's out of context in his report then.
Yes, it is. It is. He really did. He twisted it so that if someone goes in to look at these, like I know other officers have gone in to look at it, like, you know, Manatee County Sheriff said that they look at it too. The problem that they're not understanding is they're not talking with me. And actually what happened, I did not say she was bipolar. I did not say she had mental issues. Joe is the one who said that day to me prior to me knowing about Sheena's death. He's the one that is filling my head with, all of a sudden, she's crazy.
How old was he at the time?
He, at the time, was 45.
Right, so he would have a certain age sophistication that he could use to as a good leverage tool against her, coming across as the older, mature, experienced, sound man. Here's something that really bothers me, if we go on in the statement a little more longer, is we have domestic violence. We have someone who, and I can tell you this, someone who experiences domestic violence could be suicidal, could be depressed because of it. When they are taking pictures of themselves, when they're gaining evidence, and when they're sending very hot text messages, they're not thinking about suicide. Suicide is that game over, resignation, defeated type of feeling. A person that has been so battered for so long in domestic violence that is suicidal doesn't put up a fight, doesn't take pictures, doesn't try to prove anything. It doesn't fit. It doesn't fit at all. Then I have here, I also spoke with Genevieve's Joseph fiance via phone reference, his fiance Sheena's death. Joseph also was very upset about the loss of his fiance. It sounds awful accepting. But he was able to talk to me for a few minutes. Now, this is what blows me away, is that given the scenario that we have, even if there was nothing suspicious about it forensically, the fact that we have a suicide so close to the domestic violence or even an argument is very upsetting. While speaking with Joseph, he was able to tell me, now what does that mean, he was able, did he have to overcome his tears to say this? He was able to tell me that he and Sheena had gotten into an argument the night prior to Sheena being found. Not the night prior to Sheena committing suicide, but Sheena being found. Joseph stated that the argument, okay, it wasn't domestic violence, it's been minimized to an argument, was about Joseph calling his kids and wishing them Happy New Year. Now, Susan,
and
I don't remember.
He hasn't wished his mother a Happy New Year in all his life. This guy is a self-serving, narcissistic psychopath who is, you know, on steroids, sells steroids, goes to the strip clubs. This is somebody who grew up in Philly, whose family has ties to organized crime or did have organized crime ties, and he is scary. I mean, he is dangerous. And he, for a living, he lays floors, carpet. So, again, I'm thinking that Detective Diaz, you know, got a new house somewhere.
Oh, I want to talk about Happy New Year. I have to talk about Happy New Year. When you put your children to bed at night, you say good night, you say I love you. Rarely, when you wake up in the morning, you see your loved one, you say good morning. Rarely does someone tell us a greeting, a salutation in a statement. When they do, is indicative of a very bad relationship. So if I, in other words, Susan, if I said to you, I'm going to go to bed now, I'm going to say goodnight and I love you to Heather first, then I'm going to go to bed, you say, why is he telling me that? That's kind of strange. Everyone does it. Why would you need to tell me? It is the need to tell in a greeting or any type of salutation this way to portray something that really isn't. So when it does enter, when someone enters a statement, oftentimes someone will say goodbye in a statement. It indicates the time of death. The Stephen Nodin case, he has sent an email down in
Alabama.
Southern part
that's
of the country. That's
where Angel Downs, he's going on a second trial. It was in this
that's
trial
correct.
In December, and he murdered him.
Yeah. One of the things that I told one of the journalists to look for in looking at those emails is that find out if there's anything where he says any type of greeting or departure saying in the email, and that's your time of death. And sure enough, he had written in his statement, and I said, see you, babe, and never saw her again. He did say see you, babe, more than likely, before he killed her. Well, in this case, this fella is telling the cop over the phone that all he wanted to do was to wish his kids a Happy New Year. And that she was arguing and bad about that. He's portraying himself as this wonderful father who's so close to his kids, and here is this terribly selfish woman, young woman, who won't even, who's coming between me and my kids and won't even let me say Happy New Year to them. In statement analysis, he gives himself away with that greeting, with that Happy New Year phrase. He is trying to persuade the listener, at this point would have been the cop, how wonderful he is, and he's just so close to the kids. I promise you, if the kids are interviewed, they'll tell you a much different story about this guy. This type of violence is not isolated to just Sheena. It would come before Sheena, and it certainly would come after Sheena. And you're right in terms of your narcissistic, psychopathic description. That's exactly what we're talking about. This way he can portray himself as something special. Where was the formal interview? Where is the recording? Where are the transcripts? Why wasn't this handled in even the most basic of professional manner? I don't get it.
And I don't get why also with the car, you know, they come in one car. Why does he take a suitcase? I mean, where is she supposed to go? This was all staged. He had all this planned out. And again, if you would have talked to the person next door who gave the 911 account of what happened, When they spoke to Kelly, because the police didn't ask him a lot of questions, they didn't go through this, you would know it was so violent that they had to call 911. I'd take this to Vegas that Sheena's fingernails had Joe's skin under them from the night that she was hung, and those fingernail clippings are nowhere to be found now.
Right. Well, right. I was able to get everything out, but they have withheld. They have withheld. First of all, they never had the nail clippings tested because they're not responding to my requests. I've asked for everything else, the leash, her clothing. I've got everything else. The one thing I can't seem to get back from them is the nails so that they can be tested for DNA, and now they're not responding to me. But additionally, I want to mention is that when I finally get face-to-face with Detective Diaz, because I find out he's not interviewing the boyfriend, I get down to his office, and I asked him, and this is 21 days later, I asked him, did you check and question the pub next door to see if Sheena could have left the room that night and gone to the pub next door? Did you do this? Did you do that? No, 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 no. I'm like, all right, what are you doing with this case? He goes, I can't do anything with it. I don't have the medical examiner's report. And I said, well, that's funny. I do. And I said, so humor me. What are you going to do with this case? And he said, look, sorry for your loss.
Wow. What, talk about the fact that when, you know, you're putting all this together and when you prepare for your daughter's funeral, what is Joe doing? Who is he staying with and how is he behaving? Because, Peter, this is very unusual, but not unexpected. Go ahead.
Well, from the minute we found out about Sheena's death, Joe arrives a few minutes later, and when we're notified. So needless to say, you know, I'm a mess, and I know that there's a male officer out in the garage waiting for him to show up. And so from my understanding, when Joe came up to the house, the male officer out there just looked at, you know, Joe and just said, sorry for your loss. And so, you know, Joe went to the ground out in the garage, and I ran out to the garage, and he was about to put his this axe that was out there almost fell on him. I should have let it go, but it's just reaction. And I lifted his head because he's moaning and groaning on the floor. So I went to lift his head to look at his face, and there were no tears. But
he hangs around Sheena's grandmother. He's doing things, Peter, to go look.
He stays the entire time, but the very next day, he goes to a strip club. Then two nights later, he goes out to the movies with his friends. 2 weeks later, he's dating another girl.
Oh, wait, about the morning that Sheena was found.
But he's staying at the grandmother's house. Peter, looking for stuff. I'm sorry, go ahead.
He's not staying at the grandmother's. He stayed with us.
Okay, stay with you. Worse. So here's a traumatized family. He goes, but he's looking for things, Peter. He's looking for things that Sheena may have left behind. So that's why he's there. And that's what's disturbing, you know, in addition to this, that he's not there to be anything but find out what he can, grab what he can, look behind pictures, see if Sheena left anything there.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure he's looking for memory cards. I'm sure he's looking for digital cards.
He had also gone to my mother's and gave her some money because he said that's what Sheena would have done. And my mother, you know, gets upset because, you know, here it was, you know, not too long later, and all Joe was doing was bitching about how Sheena wanted a baby and how she wanted him to have his vasectomy reversed. And my mother couldn't figure out, why is he complaining about all this now? It's over. Why is he bitching about it?
Yeah. Well, this is, we'll go back to the investigation. We have domestic violence, then a suicide. Talking to the fiancé, he disparages the victim, which is a very strong indication of guilt. He disparages the victim, and then the officers ask him if he felt that he could come back to Bradenham Beach tonight, and he advised he was too upset to do so. Now, if that didn't trigger a red flag where they say, we're going to go down and pick him up immediately for an interview and photograph every inch of him, including his fingernails and under his fingernails, and check him for any defensive wounds that she may have inflicted upon him, at that point, I think that the just not doing that itself indicts the entire investigation. It indicts the lack of that investigation or the investigation that should have been. Mm-hmm. How could they let him get away with that? How could it be that the interview was for 3 weeks later?
Well, because
we
wouldn't feel that
we've been asking ourselves.
I'm sorry.
You didn't see that. He was wearing long sleeve shirts at the time. It's warm. Everybody else is in, you know, polos and shirts. This bozo's wearing a long sleeve shirt.
Yeah, you know, I was informed of that, but I did find a photograph when we had gone back down, and I wanted to see where she was. I wanted to see the beach house where she last was, and I got a photograph, and it was actually a black T-shirt. So I do just want to verify that because I don't want to say things that are inaccurate. I had asked anyone if they had remembered what he was wearing, and I was told a black turtleneck, long sleeve. But I found a photograph from the next day, and that's not what was in the picture.
Right. And even in the interview, and we're getting just the officer's description of the interview, we have him continuing to disparage her, continuing to attempt to portray himself as someone special, and she as not only is she selfish, but he does so in a backhanded way, complimenting himself. She was selfish about her time with me. How is it that this took place 3 weeks later, but how is it the interview itself did not raise red flags and right away ask him for a polygraph?
Wow,
and
that
is very interesting. Because when someone commits suicide, a loved one commits suicide, no, genuine suicide, not a cover-up, there is such a terrible grieving process. I've noticed already your daughter has been dead for 3.5 years.
Yes.
Yeah, you're still speaking about her in the present tense. You're still referencing her with present tense verbs. You noticed that he was able to reference her immediately in the past tense. Okay.
Hmm.
Those are natural things that take place. He should not have been able to accept her death. And you know how we're all raised with the way that we don't speak ill of the dead? When someone goes off on a dead person this way, this was only 3 weeks later. First of all, he blamed her that morning to the officer. And then 3 weeks later, he's still hot enough to do that. He's screaming guilt to the officer who doesn't seem to have an instinct or an ability to follow this.
Very interesting.
I've never seen anything this poor.
What other things are not bad at you besides that?
It's hard to believe. Say it again, Susan.
What else popped out at you about this?
I feel like the officer, made a snap decision. He's lazy-minded, and he wanted it swept under the floor. And then once the thing has turned back, the department doesn't want to be embarrassed, and that's what happens.
But nobody wants to embarrass them, Peter. All they want is for the case to get reopened, for the same hands not to be doing this, and for justice. It's not about – that's all anybody wants. Just reopen the investigation and do it correctly.
Right, but any professional that reads this report by itself, even without Sheena's mother's explanation of the fact that these are statements in response to direct questions, anyone that reads this as a professional can see that this guy was really – giving red flags of guilt in the disparagement of the victim, which is just something that's not done in a suicide. What we expect to hear is a lot of regret and some even blaming of himself about the fights that they had. The genuine regret will show itself where they'll take certain responsibility, not all, but certain responsibility. According to the officer, this man took no responsibility and did nothing but pile on blame and make her appear worse. There's no protective nature in him that innocent people have. We want to protect the memory of our loved ones when they're gone. He doesn't. He is so zoned. He's 3 weeks later that he continues to rip her out. And he also continues to portray himself.
In short, And there's no way, in my opinion, you could do that. And, you know, there's because there's enough of a space there. She was lifted up there.
I could read this without any forensic information or any evidence at all and just say, hey, this sure sounds funny about a suicide. This doesn't sound like a suicide to me. This sounds like a very angry homicide. Let me ask you a question. Let's talk about his post-crime behavior. Now, this is beyond the statement. Now, his post-crime behavior has been he went to a strip club. He went around looking for items. He's already gone on to another girlfriend. Wow. I'm not sure what else we could say to this officer other than, are you kidding me?
Six months later, he was arrested for domestic violence against his ex-wife. Now, he did get off those charges, but 6 months later, there he is, arrested for domestic violence.
Which is no surprise. This is his pattern. This is who he is. And I promise you that if we were able to get a copy of the interview of the charge that he got dismissed, that his interview would sound almost the same as Sheena's. That he is this loving man who just wants to say goodnight to his kids and kiss them goodnight, and she was selfish, and she got into his face, and she spit, and she did this and that. He doesn't even sound like a man.
Mm-hmm.
He can't take responsibility for anything. It doesn't read like a suicide report. To me, it sounds like this is just a little bit off topic, but when a 911 call is made by a guilty caller in a domestic homicide, one of the things that is always looked for in that call, besides they sometimes don't ask for help for the victim, but one of the things that stands out strongly among guilty callers is that they disparage the victim. Sometimes it's in a subtle way. Sometimes it's overt, the way he did it. His text messages don't do anything to strengthen or weaken his case because he's consistently nasty throughout. And that's why I wanted to know of his age, because he's not young enough to be stupid where after she's dead to send these I love you type of text messages. He only has one that expresses concern, which I think is showing nervousness. I think that those were deliberate. I think he telegraphed the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
He may not have telegraphed by saying to you, I'm afraid she's going to commit suicide. That's like saying, you know, I'm afraid my child's going to be kidnapped, and then 3 weeks later the child is kidnapped, like the Baby
mm-hmm.
Island case. He telegraphed what was going on. These types of violent incidents get stronger and stronger, and if she found comfort in that little dog, that's
mm-hmm.
what he's going to use to punish her, to exert that final bit of control and that final salty insult to her to make her feel as humiliated as possible. I'm shocked. I'm shocked that this has been so easily dismissed, because
mm-hmm.
usually you'll find other caring professionals that will say, you know, hey, chief, we dropped the ball on this one. We need to reopen this, or we need to send this over to the county people to look at it, or even the state people to look at it, because this is really awful. This is not something we can excuse.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know the politics of the departments and the areas, but I would hope for at least someone in there that could just look at this report by itself, even without asking you questions about it, and say, hey, in the very least, let's re-interview him. Let's ask him if he'll polygraph. Let's see what his
mm-hmm.
response is to that. Do you know if it's ever been offered to him?
No, it never has.
But here also, what Kelly does is that she meets last June with the city attorney, with the mayor, with the chief of police, I believe with Diaz, and she has not one meeting but two over a substantial period of time where she has poured over things after a few months after the death certificate's changed to undetermined, and she presents her case. And it's the detective who refuses and doesn't care. And
mm-hmm.
and she's worked very hard to present all the facts, provide all the information, and has done more on this case than they would have done. And what was their decision, Kelly?
Their decision was, basically they told me, if I bring them substantial evidence, they'd look at reopening it. But I'm not the police.
Why is it up to the citizen? What they're saying is, I dare you to sue me. I dare you. Because
it
sounds like the makings of a lawsuit for negligence on their part.
Yeah, well, the city attorney asked me about that. She asked. You know, you could file a civil suit.
Yeah. At this point, that's what it sounds like.
But why do this? Why say I dare you? What, you know, now Kelly's going back down there. You know, Kelly also...
Let me answer that question.
Okay, go ahead.
When someone says, I dare you, what it really means is don't do anything because you're not going to spend the money on it. You're not going to waste the next 10 years in court. It's not really a dare. It's a reminder, just go away because you're not going to beat City Hall, that sort of thing.
Yeah, but what Kelly also does is, for people that don't know, she is a certified trained searcher for missing persons for the Q Center. She goes and looks for missing loved ones around the country, and she's going back to Florida to her territory. This is what she does. So, and a lot of times police don't have the resources, police aren't able. This is where the Q Center comes in, and this is what Kelly does. This is what she's given her life to.
I do want to say I've had the opportunity to work with some of the most amazing law enforcement professionals. They've been extremely helpful. Many are just beside themselves as well, how this case has been handled. Many have stepped up to help me. I'm a strong supporter of law enforcement. I do want to get that out there.
And so am I.
That makes more sense to me. But yeah, and as you are, Susan, but it makes sense because, as I said, that any professional that reads this is going to know something is terribly, terribly wrong. It's nice to hear that you have met others that can recognize that something's wrong. Do they have any advice for you on a next step?
Yeah, they do. They got me. We met on a crime. We met on a search, and everybody said, you've got to deal with, you know, meet with this woman, and that's how we started this. And it's been like pulling teeth.
Yeah, they're very frustrated, you know, because the chief would not take a phone call from me for 2.5 years. And it wasn't until many people wrote into the mayor's office on our behalf that finally got us a meeting with the chief. And I asked the chief finally after 2.5 years, how is it that your chief of police and you wouldn't take a phone call from me or a meeting? How could that be? And, you know, basically he just didn't want to have to deal with me. And I said, you've got to promise me you don't do this to another family. Because when we had the meeting, he was kind of like, oh, it was a pleasure to meet you. Basically, I wasn't all that bad. Because I presented my case in a professional way. And, you know, so he didn't find it all that bad to go through. It's not like I was there, you know, putting him down or anything. But 2.5 years as chief of police, other law enforcement officers couldn't understand why wouldn't he meet with me? Why wouldn't he address my concerns? Everybody just got lost trying to figure out how on earth could they be getting away with this. And it all comes down to this. Bradenton Beach Police Department does not have an internal affairs. I called internal affairs, and they said, I'm sorry, they are out of our jurisdiction. It's for the Manatee County. They said, we don't have jurisdiction over Bradenton Beach. There was one FDLE officer who started looking into things and was talking to one of my law enforcement officer helpers, and she kind of fell off the face of the earth. She had gotten a lot of the information, and then there was no follow-up. But my contact with the FDLE in Tallahassee basically said, without any moral turpitude or, you know, anything to prove that the officer did something illegal, they couldn't help me.
And in the meantime, we're getting phone calls from people or conversations come through. They'd like to help us. They give us some information, but they're afraid they're going to lose their job, their pension, their families are in jeopardy, and they can't really help. But, you know, they'll whisper things. They'll say things. And then you have to put together the pieces of the puzzle to then go, okay, takes you a couple of weeks to go, oh, is this what they meant? Because it's a one-shot phone call or a one-shot email. Stuff comes through my public relations company from this case in the last couple of weeks for people who want to get a hold of me, and I do, and it's like they're off-the-radar kind of people. They have to be so careful. But they're willing to stick their neck out, but they can't stick it out all the way, and that's been the problem.
Mm-hmm. Bottom line is what officer, the day after a domestic violent incident where they find a dead body, what officer lets someone say, no, I'm too upset to be interviewed? It just doesn't happen anywhere.
Well, I also want to add that just a couple days after this happened, Sheena's father went down to the police department to pick up her suitcase. And Joe arrives with her father. When they get out of the car and they walk up to Detective Diaz, Joe introduces Sheena's father to the detective. And they shake hands.
How's that possible? He's never supposed to have seen him before. How does Diaz know who this guy is?
But one thing further. There, Sheena's father is in his police department. He could have brought Sheena's father in and sat him down and asked him a few questions. You know, what was your last conversation with Sheena? How did she seem? When did you last see her? You know, all these sorts of things. Not even close. He signed for the suitcase. Joe signed for the jewelry that he decorated and put on her body. And
how is he allowed? Wait. He's not the next of kin. How is he allowed to sign for jewelry that's on the daughter that belongs to the family? How is he able to do that?
It would be interesting to hear Denny's take on all of this, too, from the inside. It just makes no sense. No sense at all.
No. So the whole thing's skewed.
It just has a very bad smell to it, and it seems to me, and I could be wrong, but it seems to me that it may not be so much nefarious as it is that someone who did just really poor job, who apparently has no oversight and there's no internal investigation, was able to take the absolute most lazy road he could and let someone who was perhaps a murder suspect at that point, not knowing, not coming in for an interview for 3 weeks.
Detective Diaz has spent more time defending Joe and belittling me. And that's just amazing. It's almost as though he's befriended the boyfriend.
That's like re-victimizing you over and over and over.
Yeah.
So
you see why I don't talk about him in the greatest of admiration, because my toilet paper has more worth than this guy. I mean, he's done things to take this victim and like you said, very often.
Yeah. Your anger is completely justified.
It's terrible.
I'm amazed at your strength to be able to even go through this with that type of continual insult, just that he could even defend your daughter's alleged killer is an insult and a very painful insult. But
I mean, is there trafficking going on there? Is there steroids being sold? Do they want to? Because that's what this guy does. So do they want to keep that going? Do they know about it? You know, this is a beautiful island. This is where people get married. They have gorgeous weddings. This is where people save their money to come to. It's an amazing place. And offices that are there, somebody told me the other day that they're one notch below. They're there because they didn't make the grade at a regular bigger city or a county. That's why they're there. So they're like Walmart cops.
Right. And there's also, with the small town type mentality like that, there's a tremendous amount of arrogance with that. The chip on the shoulder of the small town cop is usually pretty bad. You know, that's just
Andy Griffith look like heroes. I mean,
they just feel like it's a failure. I had a case once where an expensive electronic item was stolen from someone, and the police had gone and done an investigation and concluded that too many people had access to it, that it can't be solved. And I had told the company themselves that if they asked all their workers to write out a statement of what they did that day and give me the statements, I would tell them who did it and what time they did it, maybe even how they did it. And it took me only a few hours of analysis, and I told them who did it. I told them what time they did it and how they did it. And they were not able to get a confession. So when I interviewed her and I confronted her with the evidence, the verbal evidence, she confessed. So the owner was very pleased, obviously, that the crime had been solved and justice had been served, until she found out that the local police, who had failed in the investigation, refused to press charges. And she said, well, the local police keep telling me they don't have proof. And she said, I told them they have a written confession. And even that wasn't good enough. It was just the fact that the local police department was embarrassed at their failure. And it sounds like this is a department that just has no experience in homicide. But even the most common sense person would know not to contaminate a crime scene and get that subject in for an interview immediately, and a forensic interview, and get pictures taken and get him examined completely. That's not something that any training is needed for.
Yeah, so, and this is an election year down there. So the
there's nothing worse than arrogance and ignorance. When they're married together, it's lethal, because then the pride comes out as they. That small town, I'll get back at the world for not being chosen to be a big city cop type of mentality. And that's fine when it comes to creepy parking tickets and things like that. Not when it comes to murder. Not when it comes to a violent man.
But the prosecutors down there also, and this, they're all running for office. And you know, they've done the same thing about slamming the doors. So where are the voters if they care? Because there's other crimes besides this one. Where are the voters in this with the prosecutors and the sheriffs that are running for office? Pick the people that aren't part of the Good Old Boy Network. Pick the people that are going to do something and protect the community and do what they were sworn to do, uphold the law and justice. Because I don't see that.
Yeah, we need someone that would actually have a political interest in that, someone that really cared about justice. If we couldn't make this politically palpable for them, someone that just really is bothered by this.
That's what we were working on.
In the political world.
Because Kelly goes back there, and we're hoping to also get this information out there and get the awareness out there. So we've been working on that, and you know, that's the only way. And hopefully the people, the community will listen, and somebody, if there's a change of the guard in the system, both in the sheriff and in the state's attorney's office, this case will get prosecuted. I know it, because there's enough here. And who would stand by and take me, you know, I've been slamming this department literally for a year, on and off. Now it's election time. We're seeing the people that are running against the people from the Good Old Boy Network, Sheriff Walt and Peter Lombardo, who are running for state's attorney, they've signed a petition for Sheena. So I'm asking everybody, because we're running out of time, if you go to justice4sheena.com, please sign the petition. Don't just sign the petition, but send it on to other sites. Get your friends on the Facebook pages or social networks to sign it. Take it to your work. Put it up there and say, please, take it to your church. Because we have to have justice. And your voice matters. Peter Hyatt, thank you so much. Your blog is Seamus O'Reilly. blogspot.com. You can read all about this case and other cases around the country that Peter highlights with such eloquence, and pretty much on target as far as I'm concerned. Thank you to our CrimeWire team, our director of research, Kim Colton, and public relations at imaginepublicity.com. Our next show will be June 12, 2012. Tune in as we continue to analyze cases, crimes that interrupt and wreak havoc on families looking for answers and seeking justice. Thank you for joining us tonight on CrimeWire. We always welcome your support and value you as guests. If you'd like to be your case to be featured on a future CrimeWire show, email us at thecrimewire@gmail.com. Until next week, everybody, God bless and be safe. Thank you both.
Thank you.
And Peter, I'll give you her stuff. I mean, I think that maybe you can't do something. Is Peter still there? Peter's gone. Okay. All right. So...
Wow.
Get off of this with me because it's going to be recorded. It's probably still going.
Okay.
I don't know. Okay, so get off. I'll call you back.
Okay, bye.